Chapter 5. The Dark Crown Victoria was an FBI squad car out of the Omaha field office. The duty agent there had taken Sheriff Goodman's call and had reacted instantly. Goodman had said professionals, which in FBI terms meant organized crime, and organized crime was the FBI's preferred diet, because reputations were made there, and glory and promotions were earned there. So an on-call special agent had been dispatched immediately, a decorated 20-year Bureau veteran, highly qualified, highly experienced, and highly regarded. Her name was Julia Sorensen, and she was just shy of 47 years old, and she had been in Omaha just shy of 47 very happy months. Omaha was not New York or D.C., but it was not a Bureau backwater either. It was not Siberia. Not even close. For some unknown historical reason, crime followed the railroad tracks, and Nebraska had some of the planet's biggest rail yards within its state lines. So Sorensen's talents were not being wasted. She was not frustrated, and she was not unfulfilled. She dialed as she drove and called Sheriff Goodman's cell and told him she was on her way. She arranged to meet him at the crime scene in 1 hour's time. Goodman was in his car when he took that call. He had one deputy securing the crime scene and babysitting the eyewitness, and all the others were blocking the local roads out of the county, which left himself as the only available mobile unit. He was out and about, looking for the bright red car. His county was large, but not geographically complicated. A century earlier, someone had drawn a square on a map, and the shape had stuck. The square was transected twice, first by a two-lane road running all the way across it left to right, west to east, and again by a two-lane road running bottom to top, south to north. Those two roads met near the middle of the square and made a crossroads, around which a town of 8,000 people had grown up. Cross-county traffic east to west and west to east was light, because the interstate 50 miles north ran parallel and took most of the load. But traffic north to south and south to north was markedly heavier, because in one direction the interstate attracted traffic, and in the other direction it dumped it out. It had taken local business people about 5 minutes to notice that pattern, and 3 miles out of town to the north, they had developed a long ragged strip with gas and diesel and diners and motels and bars and convenience stores and cocktail lounges. Relaxed citizens thought of the place as merely another business district, and uptight citizens called it Sin City. It was subject to exactly the same laws, rules, and regulations as the rest of the county, but for 50 years, in an unspoken way, those laws and rules and regulations had been enforced with a very light touch. The result was keno and poker machines in the bars, and strippers in the cocktail lounges, and rumors of prostitution in the motels, and a river of tax revenue into the county's coffers. Two-way traffic, just like the two-lane road. Goodman was headed up there, for no moral reason, but simply because the place was the last stop before the distant highway, and it was pocked with abandoned lots and long-dead enterprises and windowless cinder-block walls. If you wanted to stash a getaway car and transfer to it unmolested, it was about the only game in town. He cleared the crossroads and left the respectable neighborhoods behind. Next came a soybean field, and then came a quarter-mile stretch of shoulder with old fourth-hand farm machinery parked on it. All of it was for sale, but most of it had waited so long for a buyer it had rusted solid. Then came more beans, and then came Sin City's glow in the distance. There were gas stations at each end of the strip, one on the west side of the road and one on the east, both of them as big as stadium parking lots, for the 18-wheelers. Both of them lit up bright by lights on tall poles, both of them with oil company signs hoisted high enough to see for miles. In between were the diners and the motels and the bars and the convenience stores and the cocktail lounges, all of them variously scattered on both sides of the road at random angles, some of them lit, some of them not, all of them standing alone in parking lots made of crushed stone. Some had survived 50 years, and some had been abandoned to weedy decay long ago. Goodman started on the east side of the two-lane. He looped past a diner he patronized from time to time, driving slow and one-handed, using the other on the interior handle for the spotlight mounted on his windshield pillar, checking the parked vehicles. He drove around the back of the diner, past the trash bins, and then onward, circling a cocktail lounge, checking a motel, finding nothing. The gas station at the end of the strip had a couple of fender-bent sedans parked near its lube bays, but neither was bright red, and judging by the grime on their windshields, both had been there for a good long spell. Goodman waited for passing traffic and then nosed across the road and started again on the west side, at the north end, where the first establishment was a bar made of cinder blocks painted cream about 20 years before. No windows, just ventilators on the roof like mushrooms. No red cars anywhere near it. Next place in line was a cocktail lounge, fairly clean, said to be Sin City's most salubrious. Goodman turned a figure eight around the front of it, and his pillar spotlight lagged a little. And there it was. A bright red import, parked neatly behind the lounge.